You are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM Seattle. It is 7:30 and time once again for a community forum, and we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Billy Kreuter, who is with the Washington Council to Abolish the Death Penalty, and also he's the State Death Penalty Abolition Coordinator for Amnesty International, and Mike Morris, who is Vice President with Washington Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. So I want to thank you both for coming in this morning.
Thanks for having us.
Let me start out and ask you, what is exactly the Washington Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty?
Yes, the Washington Coalition is an organization consisting of over 700 individuals and about 20 organizations, separate organizations. Some of those include the ACLU of Washington, Amnesty International of Puget Sound, Washington Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers, Fellowship of Reconciliation, Humanists of Washington, and quite a few more. All of these organizations and individuals are committed to the immediate abolition of capital punishment in Washington and throughout the nation and world, and may not agree on much else, but we are committed to that goal.
All right, let me ask you, what is the current state of both America's and Washington's death row right now?
Well, as of the most recent execution in the United States, which was this past Thursday, 736 prisoners have been executed since capital punishment was reinstated in 1977. So far this year, 53 have been executed. This is a sharp downturn from the 98 we had 2 years ago and 85 last year. There are now over 3,700 prisoners on America's death row. The death row is around the country. And there are 9 prisoners in Washington state who are presently under sentence of death. Under Washington's present capital punishment law, there have been 4 executions, 3 of which were so-called volunteers who requested to be killed. The most recent of those was this past August 28th, I think, when James Elledge was put to death in Walla Walla. Compared to 4 executions since 1993, the convictions of 6 prisoners who had been sentenced to death have been thrown out. 10 additional death sentences have been reversed. So the chances that an appealed death sentence will be carried out in Washington is actually quite low. The death sentences issued in this state are tend to be found by the courts to be on very shaky grounds. Nationally, the death penalty is at least as arbitrary and capriciously awarded in every state around the country that has capital punishment. It's at least as bad now as when capital punishment was suspended in the early 1970s.
Do you know the numbers for nationally for how many appeals are then later overturned?
Yes, a study conducted by Columbia University and released last year found that 2/3 of death sentences which went through their appeals were rejected by the courts. So we find all over the country that capital punishment is a system which is failing legally, and it's failing not because the courts are overzealous in protecting the rights of prisoners. It's failing because the convictions are wrong or the sentences are wrong, that by the standards of the law, capital punishment is being dished out completely inaccurately. It's a system which is really collapsing under its own weight.
So would that be fair then to project in this case that if you have, what, 33,000 some people on death row?
3,700 and more.
Okay. Yeah. That 2/3 of those, if they actually put them to up to a vote, that they'd probably throw those out?
Well, based on the trends of the past decade, It is likely that a large number of the 3,700 prisoners still on America's death row will have their appeals, if they are appealing, will have their appeals upheld at some point, that the sentences will be rejected, that these people will not be put to death, at least under the present sentence. One thing that the Columbia University study also found was that when sentences are overturned by the courts, if the state chooses to retry the sentence, to seek a death sentence again, it is rare that another death sentence is issued. I think the number on that was 17%. So it's quite likely that a rejected sentence will ultimately not be reinstated. It's also was found by Professor Liebman's study at Columbia University that I think it was about 11%, if I remember the number correctly, of the of the overturned convictions, when they were retried, the if they were retried at all, the prisoner was then found innocent. So the rate of convictions of people who just were not guilty of the crime at all, but nevertheless had been originally sentenced to death, that rate is really quite high. And that's in addition to the about 100 formerly death-sentenced prisoners around the country who have been released as innocent people since 1973, either innocent or their cases have just hopelessly fallen apart.
All right, give us a recent history of capital punishment here in the U.S. You had mentioned that 1977 was a significant year. What were the rulings that brought that into place?
Yeah, well, I should say Mike Morris is a working attorney right now and is probably much better qualified than me to talk about some legal aspects. But I'll give a start. See if Mike wants to put in some additional points on that. There was a ruling called Furman versus Georgia in 1972, which basically it formalized what had been the case for the preceding 6 years, which was that America had a moratorium on capital punishment due to lawsuits being brought by the NAACP and other organizations. You know, the Furman versus Georgia decision in 1972 suspended capital punishment completely. It threw out every death penalty law in the country, and everyone who was then on death row had their sentence commuted automatically just by that one decision. The decision then did not say that capital punishment was unconstitutional under all circumstances. It just said that the laws that were then in place were so arbitrary that it was that who got selected for a death sentence was little different than who would get struck by lightning, I think was the comparison that one of the opinions put into words there. The states were invited to rewrite their capital punishment laws, and they did so. Many did. Principle was supposed to be something called guided discretion, which required that the sentencing jury balance mitigating factors against aggravating factors. The earliest of those laws were upheld in a decision called Gregg versus Georgia in 1976 that said that these new laws were okay constitutionally. And the first execution was that of Gary Gilmore in Utah in 1977. Gilmore was a volunteer who was sort of rushed to execution after only about a half year after his crime. Very few other prisoners have been executed that quickly ever since. And in the ensuing 24 years, it's become clear that the capital punishment system is at least as bad now as it was when death sentences were halted and then thrown out in the late 60s and early 70s.
Mm-hmm. And basically, Gregg v. Georgia gave states the ability to choose whether individual states would have the death penalty. So we don't have the death penalty in every U.S. state. I believe it's in 23 states now.
Well, that's about the number to actually have people on death row and have held at least one execution. There are 38 states that yeah, 38 states provide for the death penalty in their law. Several of those have no one on a death row. At least one or two don't even have a death row in their prisons, one of those being New Hampshire, which came very close to abolishing the death penalty again in recent years. So there are 12, therefore, 12 states that do not provide for the death penalty at all. The District of Columbia does not, Puerto Rico does not, and the overseas territories of the U.S. do not. That together with the significant number of states that have held no executions or almost no executions means that capital punishment is really not being very vigorously pursued, except in a small area of the country. Yes, Texas has executed 252 out of the 736 prisoners executed under modern law. That's 34% of the national total. Just from one state has executed about a third of all the, of all executions that have occurred in this country. All but 100, I should point out also, all but 100 of those 252 were executed when George Bush was governor. George Bush oversaw the executions of more prisoners than any other governor in any state in history. Three southern states account for well over half of all the executions in the country. Those would be Texas, Virginia, and Missouri. And five, which is those three plus Florida and Oklahoma, account for two-thirds of the 736 executions. So it's a very regionally concentrated phenomenon. It's something that's seen largely in the former Confederacy, and really largely in those five states have been where most of the enthusiasm is. The death penalty, I'd say, is something of a cultural phenomenon in this country.
Well, it's interesting, too, that George Bush presided over 100 out of 700 and
152 out of the 252 in Texas and out of the 736.
So that's like 15% of all executions
right.
in the U.S.
Yes, that's right.
Also, the subject of volunteers has come up, and if people aren't clear on what that means, that's someone who voluntarily chooses to waive the appeals that would otherwise that they would otherwise be entitled to in order to receive the death penalty. It's felt that many volunteers, if they went through the full appeals process and all the mitigating evidence were to come in, that they would not receive the death penalty. So it's anyway, that's referred to as volunteering or as state-assisted suicide in some quarters.
You know, I think the significant point I see there is that in this state, three-quarters of the prisoners executed, that's all but one, were volunteers who refused to appeal their sentences. And one of those, that was Jeremy Sagastegui in 1998, he was very clear in the media that he committed his crimes looking for the state to put him to death. He had tried to commit suicide. He saw himself as being a failure at that, like you know, so he felt that he was a failure at everything else. But the state will take care of it for him with a nice, high-tech, clean, fast method. And he said that his three victims would have been alive if Washington State didn't have the death penalty. He said that many times. Governor Locke, when in 1998 he refused to commute the sentence, issued what I found to be a really quite a snide remark in response. But Gary Locke refused to just look at what had been clearly reported in the press, Sagastegui's own clear statements, that the death penalty encouraged murder in that case. That probably was true of the other two volunteers in Washington as well. Wesley Dodd, who was put to death in 1993, and James Elledge just this past August. Elledge started maneuvering to gain a death sentence the same week that Sagastegui was put to death in October of 1998. These were crimes that were committed at least in part because Washington exercises the death penalty. We would be a safer state if, it's been our experience, we would be a safer state if Washington abolished the death penalty. And this is true in several other regards as well. Okanagan County wanted to try a case. This was about 3 years ago, I think. They wanted to try a case as a death penalty case. Ultimately, they didn't. And ultimately, the defendant was sentenced to life without parole. But just in even attempting to pursue a death sentence, they ran out of money. They couldn't replace police cars and equipment for the police cars. I think they couldn't buy tires, so the cops were driving on bald tires because they were pursuing a death sentence. Well, I'd say that the death penalty reduced the safety of Okanagan County. And in fact, the legislature then passed a bailout bill because they saw it was a great burden to small counties to pursue death sentences. And the legislature was right on that point. But that wouldn't have been my solution. They should have abolished the death penalty, not made it cheaper and easier for a district attorney to pursue aggravated murder charges.
We've seen the effect of the expense of the death penalty fairly recently in the Robert Yates case, where Spokane chose to not to pursue the death penalty in the case of a confessed serial killer, mostly because of the tremendous expense that would be involved. Another point that rises out of this, I think, is that the volunteers that we've been speaking of here are volunteering for the death penalty in order to get out of life behind bars, in order to escape from that. So the question of what the ultimate punishment is kind of comes up. Is the death penalty really more punitive for people than life in prison? I think a pretty convincing argument can be made that given the kinds of deprivation and isolation that are inflicted on you in prison, especially on death row, that if people really do want to pursue the ultimate punishment, that the death penalty may not be it.
Yeah. Although, as you mentioned, Mike, I also represent Amnesty International, and I think from our perspective, the issue wouldn't be so much, how are we making it worse for the prisoner? Our perspective includes the point that the democratic world has abolished the death penalty. It literally just doesn't exist in any other established democracy except for Japan and India, which hold virtually no executions. For example, India, which has at least four times the population of the United States, held no executions at all in most years of the past decade. Japan tends to hold at most a half dozen a year. The United States tends to hold no fewer than 60 a year in recent years. It's a punishment that the rest of the democratic world, and really most of the rest of the world overall, has rejected. The United States is, in 1998, was the fourth leading executioner in the world, right behind China, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and Iran, which are not democratic countries. The kind of company the United States is keeping and the kind of image the United States projects in the world because of its use of capital punishment is not that of a leading and modern democracy. Rather, it's the image of a country like the Congo, which is beset with civil war and military dictatorship, Iran, which is a theocratic dictatorship, China, which is hardly a paragon of democracy in Eastern Asia, and for that matter, the democratic countries of Eastern Asia have been at least toying with moratoriums on capital punishment, like the Philippines, which has been off and on, and South Korea now has a moratorium. So, around the world, the tendency of democracies has been to reject capital punishment. All of Europe has. In fact, it's a condition for membership in the European Union that capital punishment must be abolished, and that has caused countries like Turkey and Russia to renounce capital punishment as well. Countries which had been enthusiastic users of the death penalty now have rejected that. And
does that have does our use of capital punishment, does that have any effect on international treaties that we're a part of?
It certainly does. The United States has recently lost two suits in international courts. Those were brought by Paraguay and Germany because the United States and this was actually in regard to a specific treaty the United States has routinely violated. It's a treaty called the Vienna Convention, which regulates it regulates diplomatic relations, and the United States has for decades not informed foreign nationals of their right to contact their consulates. That's a right that's given in all and under any circumstances of arrest, but in death penalty cases, it's often been shown to make the difference between a prisoner being sentenced to death or not, because the prisoner in some cases can't speak English and doesn't understand American legal customs. Paraguay successfully sued the United States because a Paraguayan citizen was executed in violation of that treaty. And Germany did as well. There are other treaties that are important here. The International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights is a treaty that the United States signed, and it requires that the death sentence never be given to those who were under 18 when they committed their crimes. Well, the United States is one of the very few countries left in the world that does execute children, people who were not legally adults when they committed their crimes. And that's in violation of that treaty. The United States has attempted to use a legal loophole around that. The rest of the world, like the entire rest of the world, says that loophole is has no legal merit. The United States is violating international law. The United States violates the standards of international law in continuing to execute the retarded and people who have become insane.
As well as people who were juveniles at the...
And juveniles, as I was mentioning. So I wanted to return to a point that that Mike had a few minutes ago about the Yates case in Spokane, where cost was an important factor there. And that's true. But another factor that influenced the Spokane County prosecutor was that about 50% of Yates's victims didn't want death sentence to be pursued, partly because of how long that would tend to drag out. There's this term called closure, which I think has probably it doesn't have a lot of real psychological merit, but people look for closure. It's all a buzzword in the media now. Well, the closure provided by 20 years of dragging a case through a court and court hearings and constantly going right back into the newspapers again, that's not very satisfactory to a lot of people who don't want their wounds to be reopened. And a lot of the victims in the Yates case saw that and understood that a life sentence would be the much more adequate route, a healing route. So the victims told the prosecutor this, and he honored their wishes, and that was a factor along with the cost.
I think also regarding the issue of closure, it is obviously very important for the state to be very, very sensitive to and very respectful of the feelings of families of murder victims. And it's very important for there to be effective punishments in place. First of all, simply to show victims' families that they're not alone and that something will, that meaningful action will be taken if a loved one's life is lost through violence. You don't want people indulging in self-help, things like lynching, and certainly it's just the right thing to do. If someone in our community is terribly harmed by someone else, we want them to have some kind of confidence that the criminal justice system is going to act. As far as whether closure is provided, I think people have a variety of views on this. But what Billy was saying about closure not coming capital cases do go on for a long time. People are on death row often for upwards of a dozen years. This can keep old wounds open for a long time, and people who have the idea that somehow after this long wait that they're going to feel this sense of release once the life of a prisoner is taken. I think people that have been through that process, many will attest that they didn't feel this sudden release from grief and pain upon the execution of the prisoner, and that it really is something that's sort of falsely being held up in front of people as an answer to their pain that doesn't pay off in the end. And again, that's not to minimize at all the tremendous pain and really the lifelong struggle that anyone who loses a loved one to a violent crime is going to deal with. It's just that taking another life is not likely to fix that. That's the inner pain a person has is going to remain no matter what happens to someone else outside of them. And I think also this leads to the point of whether or not we're actually doing harm through the death penalty versus fixing something. It's not just families and friends of victims who remain trapped in anger and trapped in this hope that after 10, 12, 15 years, a life's going to be taken and then they won't be in pain anymore, who are harmed. It also harms the men and women that are required to participate in the killing. We require officials in the criminal justice system to take part in detaining a prisoner in a helpless state with foreknowledge of death, and then one day, again, after years and years, leading them to a death chamber, strapping them down and killing them. And these people that are involved in this process are human beings too. They have human emotions as a result, or they have human emotions also, and as a result, harm is done to them. I think harm is also done to those of us who would prefer that killing wasn't done in our names, that our tax dollars weren't used in order to take life. And I think it harms society in general. In my opinion, it makes society harder and colder, and makes criminals more desperate to have a death penalty. It seems from some statistics that the death penalty may in fact create an increase in violent crime and murder in places where it is used. So there just isn't, and again, tying that into what I said earlier about, what the worst punishment is, death or life in prison, I think you combine all those things, and I think there are very real questions whether the death penalty really is the most effective way to respond to violent crime. And I would certainly argue that it's not only not the most effective way to respond to violent crime, but is in fact an aggravating factor in sort of general societal violence.
Yeah. I would probably want to emphasize Mike's point that the studies which have been done to examine whether the death penalty functions as a deterrent have almost unanimously found that no, it does not function as a deterrent. And there have been studies showing that, in fact, it encourages murder. And as I point out, the Sagastiki case, where it was clear that murder was caused by the death penalty. Even take something like the September 11th hijackings. Somebody is looking for martyrdom. We shouldn't be offering that encouragement.
You guys have some events coming up here.
Yes, we do.
We've got a couple minutes left.
Right, okay. I really did want to mention also that the studies as well showing that the death penalty costs more than life imprisonment, and that's been found even by the chief judge of Washington's court.
Right.
And yes, we do have two events coming up. Just briefly, we have next Friday, October 26th, the Catholic Bishop of Detroit, Thomas Gummelton, who's a well-known peace and justice advocate and social activist, will give a talk entitled Forgiveness, Not Vengeance, the Death Penalty from a Gospel Perspective, at St. Mark's Cathedral, 10th Avenue East in Seattle, 7:30 to 9 o'clock p.m. And then the Washington Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty has its annual conference on November 3rd. Mike, do you got the details?
Yes, that's the annual conference of the Washington Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. It's called Building Bridges. It takes place on November 3rd, 2001. That's a Saturday. From 9:45 a.m. to 4 p.m., and it's at the Cedar Park Assemblies of God Church in Bothell. And the featured speakers will be, I spoke earlier about the effect on prison officials that are required to take part in a killing. And one such person is Don Cabana, who's a retired warden from Mississippi and the author of Death at Midnight, The Confession of an Executioner. And he talks about the personal costs of being required to participate in this process. Also speaking will be Kate Lowenstein, who's the national organizer for the Murder Victims Families for Reconciliation. And she speaks with great credibility about the death penalty not being the best thing for victims. And again, she speaks with such credibility because she is a member of a murder victim's family.
Information and contact is on the Washington Coalition's website, www.scn.org/WCADP. And the phone number is 206-622-8952. Could I just conclude, Mike, by saying then that the death penalty really is on its way out in this country? As a lot of listeners may be aware, the state of Illinois has had a moratorium in place because of that state's disastrous record or disastrous experience with capital punishment. And there have been moratorium bills introduced in Olympia, Washington, in the past 2 years. They'll keep coming back until they pass, which we expect will be soon.
All right. Well, with that, I want to thank you both for coming in this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just been talking with Billy Kreuter, who is with the Washington Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty and also the state's death penalty abolition coordinator with Amnesty International, and Mike Morris, who is vice president with the Washington Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty.